Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. There we go. All right. Hey, if you've got your Bibles this morning, we're going to be looking in Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25 is where we're going to be at this morning. A wonderful story. Wonderful parable, actually, that Jesus tells. And so you may have heard it before. If you haven't, well, you'll hear it today. And we're going to talk all about it. So I got a question, though, for you. Last week we talked about how our core values, which we said that's how we win or what it's going to take for us to win. And those core values, let's go over them real quick. We're Bible study and prayer, being in a small group, serving someone other than yourself, giving generously, and engaging people. And the challenge last week was to go out and do those things and to figure out which one you struggled with the most and then try to work on it. So the question is, because we said those are a metric of evaluation, how'd you do this week? Some of us may have started out hot out of the box and then we kind of tapered off, right? Some of us may have started slow and ramped up, and some of us just wasn't our week. You know, that does happen, even for us pastors. You know, some weeks just ain't our week. But here's the good thing. Each week, you've got a new opportunity to start over. And so I hope today that if you didn't do as good as you wanted to last week, that this week you'll start over, maybe even when you get home, and try to accomplish those five core values that we talked about, because that is how you personally are going to move yourself and others toward Christ, and how we collectively are going to move ourselves and others toward Christ. And some of the things that we'll do throughout the year are going to be geared toward those things, right? So today what I want to do is I want to highlight one of those core values. And I'm going to be honest with you, I had great visions of how this message was going to turn out. And then I got to typing in the message and I was like, that's going to be too much for one Sunday. They don't want to be here till 1 o'clock. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to lay a foundational stone, so to speak, or a foundational layer for what it means to be a generous giver today. And then throughout the spring and maybe into early summer, there'll be some breaks in between major series, you know, in between John or Easter or somewhere around there. And we'll pick back up this idea of what it means to be a generous giver. And we'll talk about it in several ways in those breaks that we have between major series. So today, what I want to do is just lay a foundational layer for what it means to be a generous giver. And we're going to do that by looking at a very famous parable that Jesus tells, which is in Matthew chapter 25, and it is starting in verse number 14. So let's begin reading. All right. This is a parable. For it will be like, we'll explain kind of the context and all that in just a minute. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted them with his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1. To each according to his ability, then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them and made 5 talents more. So he also who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had 2 talents came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, excuse me, his master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of my rest. All right. He also, who had received the one talent, came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter. Scatter no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid the talent. All right. And here's what the master said. But the master, this is verse 26. But the master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scatter no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, so that at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. Verse 30. And cast the worthless servant, that's the one who had one talent and didn't make any more, into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. All right. So let's talk about that just for a minute. What I want to do before we get into the meat of the parable is give you a little bit of context and kind of a little bit of a framework for how we're going to interpret this parable. All right, so here we go. This parable, the context in which it's told in, it's during Holy Week. That means the parable, Jesus tells this parable at some point between Palm Sunday, between the triumphal entry of Jesus, and the Last Supper, which is Thursday night. So at some point between Sunday and Thursday, that's when Jesus tells the parable. It comes in a direct context of Jesus and all the disciples leaving the temple complex. And as they're leaving the temple complex, one of the disciples notes how beautiful the temple is. And then Jesus goes into this discussion about how there's going to be a time when the whole temple's destroyed. And they begin asking Jesus a question. By the time they've walked out of the temple, they've gotten down the Mount of Olives, they're down the Kidron Valley and up the Mount of Olives. They're totally perplexed. And so they say, like, all right, Jesus, like, when's this going to happen? And so Jesus launches into this great discussion about the end times. So if you ever want to read, what does Jesus say about the end? Matthew 24 is your jam. And he continues that in Matthew 25 and tells several stories. This is one of those stories. So it's that context that Jesus tells the story. Now, in any parable, listen to me, in any parable, I'm going to give you Bible Interpretation 101 for the parables, okay? Whenever you read a parable, the characters in the story, the main characters, relate to certain people. Now, that doesn't mean they relate to individuals in the crowd or a specific individual in the crowd, but more generally, they relate to general groups of people. So, for example, the master in this story is God. The 5 talent and the 2 talent servants are faithful servants of God who use the talents that God has given them to bring about increase. All right. The 1 talent servant are those who do not use God's gift and therefore hoard it, waste it, and don't bring about an increase. Okay? So we got that. The master is God. The 5 and 2 talent servants are those who faithfully use the gifts of God. The 1 talent servant, those who don't faithfully use the gifts and talents that God's given them. Now, let me explain this one other key thing. In this parable, the word talent doesn't mean talent the way we use it, okay? We use a talent as someone who has an extraordinary gift or a skill, or they can draw really good, or they can paint really good, or they can sing really good, or they're a great athlete. In this story, the word talent means money. It was a very, very large sum of money. It was basically a certain poundage weight of gold. I want to think, if memory serves me correct, it was about 75 pounds of money. of gold. Think about that. Of gold coins, right? Like a weighted measure of gold coins, poundage weight. All right. Now, if I use the word talent today, I'm not talking about 75 pounds worth of gold. From this point forward, I will be using it in the way we normally use talent, which is skill, gifting, ability, something unique to you, okay? So we good on that? All right. So, out of this parable, there are four points that we need to know, and we're going to take those four points, and we're going to summarize them down. We'll give those four points, and then we'll draw some conclusions, and then we'll go home today. All right? Is everybody ready? Here we go. Point number one that you need to see out of this parable is this. The master entrusts his property to his servants. Okay? The master, or maybe I should say it this way. The master entrusts his property to people. Now, the master entrusts his property to people. Now, I specifically worded that to elicit a couple points. Number one, the property is whose? The master's, not the servant's. It's his. He can do whatever he wants to with it. He could have went on a journey and given them nothing. He is not required to give them anything. Why? Because he's the master, and in this story, they're the servants. But it is the master's good pleasure and responsibility to give the servants certain sums of money in the story. In the same way, listen to me, in the same way, whatever gift, skill, ability, or talent that you have is not yours. It was God's who gave it to you. You say, look, you may say, well, I don't like the gifting that I got. Sorry. You may say, well, I want more. You and I have what we have because in God's sovereignty and omniscience, He said, I'm going to bless you and you and you and you and you with these talents, with these gifts, with these abilities or these skills. And it may only be one, and it may be three, and it may be five, and it may be 25. I don't know. But it is not your responsibility to give the talent to you. That's God's. It's His, listen to me, His, this is going to be key for later, it is His property. I don't remember, you know, this weekend we watched Boss Baby 2. If you've never watched Boss Baby, it's actually a funny movie. The premise of the movie is, or the movie starts out that there's like a baby factory in up in the sky somewhere, and you know, babies like just, you know, come on the stork or whatever. But I don't remember that happening, you know, to me. And I don't remember going through the buffet line in heaven picking out skills, because I can guarantee you I might have picked out a few different ones. Like I might have been a little taller, just a smidge, you know. Anyway, come on, y'all know what I'm talking about. Like I might have picked out a few different ones, you know. Maybe some of the same ones, maybe a few different ones. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But here's my point. It's God's property, not your property, but it is also His responsibility to divvy out the gifts and skills as He desires in the amount He desires to each and every person. What does that mean? That means that all of us in here, whether you're in here physically or you're online, that means all of us have certain talents, abilities, gifts, and skills. You say, well, I don't know what mine are. Well, that's something you need to pray about. That means something you need to ask God to reveal to you. That's something that you need to talk about. But God has given each of us something because He deemed it in His sovereign omniscience to give us exactly what we have, and as we'll see, for a purpose, for His purposes. All right. The first thing you need to know it is God's property, and it is His responsibility to give it to people. Right? You don't have to take it. God's going to give it. All right, second thing we need to learn from this passage is that, listen to me, each servant is expected to work. Can we say today there is a lack of each servant expecting to work? I mean, come on now. You can just ride down the road and the number of help wanted signs can tell you that there's an issue. Now look, I know some of y'all from a literal perspective, you have worked and you are retired. But just because you have retired from active physical labor does not mean you get to retire from God's active labor, right? You may not be going into a job tomorrow morning. Well, you're not going tomorrow anyway because it's a federal holiday. Some of you may not be, but some of you may, right? Sorry. But some of us won't go to work on Tuesday or Thursday, right? Because you've worked X number of years and you're retired. But just because you retire from this work doesn't mean that you get to retire from the Lord's work. We should all, God expects all of us to continue working for Him in some way, shape, or form. Now, I thought as I was reading this passage this week, I thought again, as I have thought many times, it is phenomenal to me, or unexpected, I would say, in the way that the master, in the way that Jesus phrases the master's interaction with the one servant, one talent servant, who goes and hides it. Right? Unbelievable. Now in Jesus' day, hiding money would not be an uncommon thing. In fact, Jesus tells another parable about a guy who finds a pearl of great price hidden in a field. Right? And so hiding money like that would not be an unnormal thing. Look, my grandfather, no joke, y'all, when Holly and I had been married for just a couple years, we were two or three years, and my granddad calls me on the phone. Hey, Travis, what you doing? I said, well, I ain't got nothing. I mean, I'm working, granddaddy. I mean, I've got a sermon to preach. Hey, I need you to come up to my house. I'm like, okay. When you think, I need you to come up here today. And I'm like, well, I can't come today. He's like, well, can't come tomorrow. And I'm like, well, hold on now. You know, hold on. Let's figure out what do you need. I need y'all to come up here and help me count coins. And I'm like, count coins? What are you talking about? Me and Holly and my sister, Lauren, arrive at my grandfather's house. And his bedroom was not big, maybe 8 foot by 10 foot, kind of small. And we get in there, and no joke, y'all, he has coins. You can't see the floor. You cannot see the carpet. Or if you could see it, it was just splotchy. Because he has coins everywhere. Change, quarters, half dollars, nickels, dimes, pennies, everywhere. And I'm like, I thought we was going to be here 30 minutes. It was hours. And we piled and sorted and counted every single rolled quarters for 30 minutes. Right? He used to have him and my grandmother used to have a little grocery store. And he saved all the change. And I thought, granddaddy, where did you get all this? He said, oh, I had it buried in the backyard. And I was like, you had it do what? You had it buried in the backyard? He's like, yeah. He said, I had it buried in jars. I just went out there and dug it up. I'm like, did you get it all? He's like, yeah, I think I got it all. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Somebody's going to come through here with a metal detector in 100 years and think they found, you know, the city of gold or something. And it's, I mean, literally, y'all, it was hours we spent up there counting. I mean, some of the quarters were, if I would have known what I know now, we wouldn't have rolled them with the regular quarters. I mean, they were so old that, like, Washington's face was beginning to be not seen anymore. And so it was probably actually like real silver, you know, and we were just rolling it together because we were like, we got to get this done. I mean, anyway, so burying money is not, that was common. But I've always thought it was interesting the way Jesus has the master, the God, interacting with the one talent servant. Fascinating to me. And it got me thinking, why would the master interact with the one talent servant with such, why would he loathe his slothfulness? Why would he loathe his inability to go out and be successful and to use his gift to multiply that gift? Why would he do that? And it got me thinking. And I think the reason, I had a couple ideas of why I believe that God detests, loathes wasting your talent or wasting your giftedness or wasting the gifts that God's given you. Here's the first one. It's because they're not yours. God's just loaned them to you. Right? Remember, what was point number one? It's his property that he has a responsibility to give to people. So God is like saying, hey, look, I've given you this for the purpose for you to go out and use. And then when we hoard it, waste it, don't use it, it's like, come on, parents, we've all done this. You thought that you've got your kid the best Christmas gift they could ever receive. Like, it is like, this is like the gift. And you're all excited about it. And like, man, it is like, whew, you spent money. I mean, you worked hours at work, you know, to buy this gift. And you paid tax on the gift. And you had to go get the gift. And even if you ordered it on Amazon, you spent time filtering and finding and which is the cheapest. And then you buy the gift and you're like, they're going to love it. And you give them the gift and they're all excited about it and open it up. And then you never see them use it. They never wear it. They never play with it. It just sits over there in the corner. And then 5 years down the road, you're selling it for $2 at the yard sale. And you're like, what did I just do? Right? I see some of you have experienced this before, right? Because you're red-faced and all that. But I imagine that's how the Lord feels when he's graciously given us all of these talents, abilities, gifts, and skills. And we're just over here twiddling our fingers, not using them, wasting them, hiding them in the ground. He's like, I loaned this out for you, not so you could just hold on to it, but so that you could use it. That's why the master in the parable gave the sums of money to the servants, is so that they could use them and go out and bring about an increase. That was the whole point. If he didn't want an increase to be brought, what would he have done with the money? He would have just kept it himself. But he gave it to them for the purpose of bringing about, he loaned it to them to bring about an increase. And that's exactly what the Lord does with us. He gives us these gifts and abilities and talents and skills so that we might bring about an increase for the kingdom. And when we don't, it's like, well why did I give it to you in the first place? Because they're loaned out. Here's the second thing, I think, of why why God loathes when we hoard those things, is because, look at me. It is in, as we said last week, to kind of coin a phrase from last week, it is in your DNA as a believer to use your gifts for an increase in the kingdom. In other words, you have to actively try to not use your gifts that God's given you, when in reality, if you would just stop hoarding them, and I would stop hoarding them, and we would stop hoarding them, and we would just, instead of having this kind of, you know, posture, we would have this kind of posture. That's the natural, in our spiritual DNA, that Jesus, that's placed inside of us, is to do this with our gifts. And so it's already in you to do this. And so when we actively do that, we're hindering what's already inside of us that wants us to use our talents, abilities, gifts, and skills. And so we have to actively try to stop that from being. And when we actively try to stop that, not only are we going against what God's loaned us, but we're going against the nature that God has graciously given to us. Craig Blomberg, in his wonderful commentary on the parables, if you're ever looking for a book on the parables, Craig Blomberg's book is by far the best. And here's what he says. Like the two good servants, God's people will be commended and rewarded Listen to his choice of words. When they have faithful discharge of their commission. Not if they have faithful discharge of their condition. Because if he'd have put the word if in there, what does that show? Contingency. Like you may or you may not do it. What's his choice of words? When they have. So the expectation, like the expectations of prayer, was that you will use what God's given you. And that's when you will be rewarded. Not if, but when. We see that backed up in the words of Jesus. Jesus says in John 20, 21, which we'll read down the road in our study on John, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." One of the great verses in John. "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." He doesn't say, "As the Father has sent me, you may be sent by me. As the Father has sent me, maybe you'll use your stuff that I've given you." No, he says, "As the Father has sent me, I send you." And what do we see Jesus doing? Using everything that God's given him to interact and to change the hearts and lives of people. And he says, "I'm sending you to do the same thing." The author of Hebrews says in Hebrews 10, 24, "Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works." What that means is, I love the translation that says spur on. Push is the idea. That we should be pushing actively, pushing one another to love and good works. What does that mean? The expectation is that we should be about love and good works. We should be using the talents, abilities, gifts, and skills. So number two, each servant is expected to work. Now here's where the rubber meets the road now, okay? Y'all ready? Three and four are going to get a little tough. Because point number three we see in this passage is there will be an assessment for every single person. What do we see happen in this story? The master, I love the language, but I'm going to be honest with you, it's a little unnerving. He comes to settle accounts. That means after the master's gone on his journey and he comes back, he brings all three servants in there together and he settles accounts with them. And he says, "Hey, show me what you've done. I gave you five, what happened?" The servant who had five, he traded with them was the language, and it says he made five more. The servant who has two talents brings in those two talents, and he's made two talents more. Right? So he settles the books with them, settles the ledger with them, and then the one talent person comes in, and guess what happens? He's only got one. Which in and of itself is not necessarily the end-all be-all. Like, the master's not mad just because he only has one talent. It's because of what he did with the talent while the master was gone. He hid it in the ground. And while I don't know what's on your ledger, your balance sheet, and you don't know what's on mine, and while I cannot physically change what's on your balance sheet, and you can't physically change what's on my balance sheet with the Lord, so to speak, here's what I do know. When it's assessment day, there's only two conclusions. It is either pass or fail. There is no in between. There's no three talent person on here who kind of squeaks by with a 69.5. Right? It is either A plus or F. That's it. Pass or fail. And the two assessment, the responses to the assessment by the master, by God, are these right here. "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into my rest." So if you faithfully use your talents, abilities, gifts, and skills, thus showing the relationship we have with the Lord, that's what you get. The fail part is, "You wicked and slothful servant, cast this worthless servant into the outer darkness." Listen to that. Listen to what's next. "In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Right? It's either pass or fail. I don't know what's on your balance sheet. You don't know what's on mine. I can't help you with yours. You can't help me with mine. We can't help each other. Ultimately, at the end of the day, that's a decision each of us individually has to make. Now, we can spur one another on to love and good works. But what's the old cliche say? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. I can spur you on and you can spur me on and we can spur each other on. But at the end of the day, each of us has to make a conscious, willful decision. Am I going to be faithful or am I not? And look at me, look at me. There are days when all of us in here, whether you're listening online or you're in the room, where all of us are unfaithful to use our gifts, talents, abilities, and skills. And that's why, thank God, John writes in 1 John 1:9, if we confess our sins, God is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So don't walk away here saying, well, if I mess up once, then I'm done. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that a course of life that continually hides the gifts, abilities, and talents and skills that God's given you shows a heart that is unfaithful to the Lord. And someone who is continually striving to use their talents, abilities, gifts, and skills for the Lord to increase the kingdom reveals a heart that is right with the Lord. So, it's the master's gifts, his responsibility to give them. Each of us has responsibility to use them, to work those gifts out. Three, there will be an assessment. But let me give you number four, because there's one other point. This parable also tells us the metric by which we will be evaluated at the assessment. When Holly was going through college as a teacher, I had never really heard this word because I wasn't an education major, but it's rubric. You may not have ever heard that word. All right, it was not a word they used in the Christianity department to on the syllabi. It was rubric. So she's up there talking about rubric this and rubric. I'm like, all right, time out. What does rubric mean? And she's like, well, in this setting, it's the way in which you're going to be assessed. Like, and so we've got to create this project, like a template for a project that we would use in a classroom, and we've got to give the kids a rubric which tells them, you get 5 points if you complete it. You get 5 points if it's creative. You get 5 points if it's, you know, this. 2 points if it's this. 3 points if it's this. And that's how they know how they're going to be graded. Well, in this parable, we get a rubric or a metric by which we'll be evaluated. Now, listen to me. This is key, okay? This is key. The rubric is only one thing, but I'm going to give you two things it's not that would be a common assumption. The rubric or the metric by which you will be evaluated is not quantitative. All right, here's what I mean. If God was only caring about the totality of the amount of return that you gave, then the five-talent servant would be the only one who was rewarded. Why? Because quantitatively, he brought the most back. Right? He brought 5 talents back. The 2-talent guy only brought 2 more back. Right? So it's not a quantitative evaluation. That doesn't mean that if, you know, this side of the church over here brings back a mountain and this side brings back a little, then that side is righteous and this side isn't. It's not a quantitative metric of evaluation. Here's the other thing. Listen to me. It's not a percentage evaluation either. You say, well, now, wait a minute now. The 5-talent guy, servant, made 5, so he doubled his money, basically. And the 2-talent person doubled his money as well. So, like, they got I think that's a 100% increase. Is that correct, math people? Did I do that right? But now the 1-talent person, he made 0%. So clearly it's a percentage thing. No, it's not. Because listen to the master's words. Listen to the master's words when he's talking to the 1-talent person. He says this. He said, it would have been better for the 1-talent servant to invest my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I should have received what was mine owned with interest. Now, I'm not a banker by any stretch of the imagination, but I do know that if that guy would have put his money in the bank, he would not have made a 100% return. I mean, y'all got a savings account these days? making pennies per year, right? So what is Jesus telling us about the about how God sees the return, the metric of evaluation? It's not quantitative and it's not percentage based either. In other words, the guys or the servants, the people who brought 100% return aren't the only ones who get in. What he's saying is, can I put it to you just like, God doesn't have some great percentage chart up in the sky, like, you know, like when you do your taxes. And at the back of the book, if you've ever read the back of the book, there's this tax sheet and it has all these decimal numbers, and then that correlates to how much tax you, dirty word I know, tax you owe, right? Y'all should check it out, it's really cool. You know, how they come up with all that stuff is like, it. Anyway, God ain't got one of them master percentage sheets in the sky, and he's like, well, I see that Travis is only at 81%, and you know, this person over here is at 210. Well, we're going to let them in, and he's just going to have to miss a little bit. That's not the issue. Because if it were the issue, Jesus would not have put that little statement in his discussion of the parable. Remember, Jesus telling a fake story. Like, this is not a real story. It's a parable. So he could just have easily cut that part out, and it would have been no difference. But it's not a percent. What that shows us is not a percentage. So you say, well, what's the metric of evaluation? It's really simple. It is really simple, and it's really good for all of us. Because it's a whole lot better than quantitative, which simply means if you're not number one, you're out. And it's a whole lot better than percentage, because you'd be kind of left to wondering, what percentage do I need to get to? And so it's really good, and it's really easy. The metric of evaluation is simply this. Are you faithful to use your loaned out talents, abilities, and gifts and skills to bring about an increase? That's it. I can sum it up even shorter. Are you faithful to use what God's given you for His glory and others' good? That's it. You say, well, and all of us should say, I can do that. Because you and I can. We can do that. Because it's just using what God's given you to bless other people for His glory and their good. Now, the reason that we started, so we're going to try to transition to our application time, we'll go home. The reason we started this as a foundational layer is because look at me. Being a generous giver doesn't just involve money. Now, you may have assumed that we were going to talk about money, and this parable is about money, but the reality of what Jesus is showing us in this parable is about being a good, here's the key word, steward of our talents, abilities, gifts, and skills goes beyond money. Because, see, what I've found in my life is that the people that I know that are the most generous with their money are also usually the people who are the most generous in every area of their life. They're generous with their time. They're generous with their talents. Listen, I had a great friend. He's kind of a mentor in my life up in Athens. One of the most generous, monetarily generous people I've ever met. I mean, ever met. But you know what he would also do? Now look, he owned three businesses across three different states at one time. And one day I needed some real advice on how to handle something. He came into office for 5 minutes and we spent the whole morning talking. He's like, you know what? I've already texted my people office. I'm taking a day. And you say, well, he can do that. He owns a business. Yeah, you're right. But he also chose to do that too. He was the first one to say, hey, when you're going on a trip, hey, if you need me, let me know. And I never, and I rarely use the words always and never, never. I think the only time he said he wouldn't be involved is when we had a lock-in. And I can't blame him there, right? Summer trips, he said, put me down. I got to the point where I didn't even have to ask because I knew he was going to be there. Whitewater rafting trips, he was there. Every time I said, hey, can you go on this trip? I'm there. Why? Because he had a foundation of good stewardship of his time, his talents, his abilities, and his skills. So it's not just about money. It's not just about generous giving financially. It's about being a generous giver across all aspects of stewarding the resources, to use the term that Jesus uses in here, God's property. God's property, to steward God's property well across every area of your life. And that's the challenge that all of us have, is how are we stewarding God's property that He's loaned out to us? And so that's the challenge this week. I've got a few questions I want to leave you with. They're on your outline. If you didn't pick up an outline, let me encourage you to do so. Here's the questions that we should kind of ask ourselves this week. Here we go. Number one, kind of question number one. Have I viewed my resources as mine or on loan from God? Because let's be honest, sometimes we view our stuff as my stuff. And I get it. We call it, that's my stuff, that's all that. But right? But really, it's on loan from God. God gave it to us. What gifts has God loaned out to me? You may not have thought about that question in a while. You need to ask yourself that. And here's maybe the final question, and maybe the most important one. How can I faithfully use them this week? Each of us has a gift. It's God's responsibility, and He gives each of His people, each person, a gift of some kind. Right? It's on loan. God expects us to use it. How can we use that gift this week? That's on you, and that's on me, to make sure I'm faithfully doing that this week and every week. And that is going to lead us into being generous givers across the spread of our life. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.